Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm Sarah, and I'm lucky enough to be here today with the very talented Josephine Moon and my co-worker, Tracy Mills.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming in. Josephine, can you tell us a bit about your new book, The Beekeeper's Secret?
So The Beekeeper's Secret is a story of redemption and reunion. It's about a family on the Sunshine Coast who has been broken apart, essentially, by traumatic events of the past. So we have Maria, who is an ex-Catholic nun who's living on top of a mountain and in what she hopes and thinks is an isolated way. And then her strange niece is down in Noosa on the coast and decides that she wants to bring the family back together. And so Maria goes down and finds two letters in her letterbox, and she knows that her isolation is about to be broken wide open. And all of her secrets are going to come bubbling to the surface.
That's what I found about the book, is that it's took a turn that I didn't expect. I mean, you look at the cover and you kind of think it's going to be just a very sweet, lovely story. And it was much, I guess, darker and deeper than what I expected.
Yes.
It's
We were discussing earlier that on the cover here is the tagline, "There's a sting in every tale."
Yes.
And I think that's particularly true here. You start reading and, you know, it's set in that beautiful honeybee haven.
Yes.
Which I wanted to ask you, is that based on like a real place? Have you been to places like that?
So in my head, it's based on a place called Shenrezig, which is a Buddhist institute at the top of a mountain at the back of Yudlow, the back of the Sunshine Coast. And you can go up and visit up there, and it's all very lovely. So it's very loosely based on that. It's quite isolated. It's well up the mountain. It has all of these steps, 60 or 70 steps that you have to walk up to get up there. And I was fascinated with these steps. And so the very first scene for this book, you see Maria walk down those steps. And yeah, so it's definitely loosely based up there.
Well, and it's a very tranquil setting, and yes. Maria is in her 70s, and as you mentioned, a former nun.
Yeah.
So you've got this whole setting that's very much like, we're going to tell you a gentle story here, and then suddenly you realise that's not what you're reading at all, and it's actually, you know, layered mysteries and secrets, and quite dark at points.
I think that the mystery is a good word. It is, there are questions here about what has happened, why is this family estranged, what has gone on in Maria's past, why is she hiding, why doesn't she want anyone to find her? I did try very hard, though, to approach a very difficult topic, I hope still gently, and not, not straight down the middle, to not traumatise people in any way, but to just sort of get around the edges of it a bit.
No, definitely. It is the pacing of the story and everything is very gentle, and it is a gently told story. You're 100% right there, but just with more of a like a dark center than you might initially think.
I was very surprised, and you must have done a lot of research into bees and to put so much detail in here. I found that quite interesting, because
I was absolutely fascinated with the bees. It started with the bees, really. The beginning of this book began because I was trying to write a book about a family saga set on a coffee farm, and I ended up with Catholic nuns and honeybees. So there was a big leap there. Yes. And so I realised I didn't have enough passion for coffee at the time. Yeah. I was researching, I was really, really interested in it, but I just didn't have this kind of fire in my belly for it. And I thought, well, what am I really interested in? And everywhere I went, I kept seeing bees and honey. And I thought, yeah, I'm really, really interested in these bees and I want to know more. And then I was hooked. And I think anybody who gets into, it's great, it's fantastic. It's such a growing interest at the moment. Yeah. And people just get hooked onto them because they're so amazing and fascinating.
Well, some of the descriptions of the honey and the cooking and food and stuff in this book is amazing.
Yeah, that was fun research as well.
Did you make some?
I did, and I because Maria actually makes a lot of skin products as well. So she makes lip balms and she makes moisturizers and all sorts of things. And at one point, I actually thought, well, hey, if this author gig doesn't work out, I might take up making cosmetics, because it was really fun.
So how did you get from a story about bees to the Catholic Church and the silence and secrecy?
So I chose to write about bees, and I'm excited about bees. And then I was still trying to write a book about a family saga with bees, and that wasn't happening. And I had these kind of nuns in the background, and they kept talking, and I kept trying to work them into that book. And clearly, at one point, I thought, "You don't belong in this book. What is going on?" And I just sort of followed Maria's voice, and that's where she took it to, the center. You know, I sort of use the analogy that it's like a dark bitter chocolate that's covered in sweet gooiness on the outside, you know, and it sort of balances out. Because as you get to the center of the book, you get to the center of the darkness, center of the mystery, which does involve the Catholic Church and the whole cover-up of abuse going on in the 1970s. So I don't really know. It just sort of turned up. It was a book that just turned up really unexpectedly.
Sometimes inspiration strikes like lightning that way.
Yeah, definitely didn't plan it at all. It just and I think, you know, when something turns up that strongly, it had such a strong energy behind it. So it sort of was the fastest book that I've written because it just had such strong energy.
Because it sounds a bit different to your other two books.
Mm.
A little bit, like the others are very lovely reads, they're interesting book. But this is, yeah, taking that darker tone, it hit me out of the blue.
Yes.
Picking it up, so.
But so many common themes, so like, not so much in the story here, but just in your method of like picking something in the natural world or something that we all know, like chocolate or tea.
Yes.
Or,
yeah.
And really like anchoring a story around that is just.
Yes. Thank you. Well, that's what I call it, foodie fiction. That's what I do. I love it. I love food. I'm obsessed with food. So I always want this, you know, this food theme woven through a story. Or the story woven around the food. But the first two, I think the differences that you probably see there is that the first two are very much focused on that sort of end level of an artisan, work person and who's making tea, who's crafting chocolate. It's all very that sort of end delicious eating.
Yeah.
Whereas this one is more focused on the production of honey, really. So the bees, it's about the bees and their society. And the more I wrote about it, getting back to the Catholic Church, as you asked, is that it just fascinated me how much the bee society, like, so the order of bees within the hive is so similar to the Catholic Church and the hierarchy and the way they work. And that I just found fascinating.
Well, faith is a strong element in the book. And how much of that was you working out your own ideas about faith? And
it's so funny. This is my second interview I've done for this book, and you're the second person you've asked me that, and I'll say the same thing I said to the last one, which is that I never actually thought about it, and until you mentioned it, it didn't really occur to me that it was a really strong theme. But I think in hindsight, you're right, there is a lot of faith in there about faith in relationships and faith in love and faith in God or the creator or whatever you want to call it, or the calling in life and that sort of thing. And I think I was brought up as a Catholic. Well, I come from a big, long line of Catholics. My, Irish ancestry, all Catholics. And certainly, I was baptized Catholic when I was in a Catholic school. But I think if I wanted to psychoanalyze this, I think my parents divorced when I was six or so, and I was in a Catholic school. Now, at that time, it was still very rigidly excommunicated. That's it, you're not part of the church anymore. So it must have actually been quite a weird position for my parents to be in, to be excommunicated but having their children still sort of at school, whatever. So I think what I worked out very early on in my life was that, and I say this at the end of the book, my experiences with the Catholic Church are overwhelmingly positive. But I think what I worked out was that I can be part of this community, and I can, I could go to church and I could sing the hymns and I could do all of this, but I didn't need the church or the priest to get to God. That I had my own relationship with God, whatever you want to call God, universe, creator, source. I had my own relationship there, and that was outside of the religious organisation. And I think that's what we find with Maria as well, is that she, she's continuing to live her life essentially as a nun, even though she's left the church because her faith is bigger than the church.
Yeah.
So I think, if I was going to, psychoanalyze myself, that's probably where it would come from.
It's a tough thing to do. So I wanted to ask also a bit, we've talked a bit about the research that went into it, but what your writing process is. So like, to what extent do you plot everything out? Did you know exactly what was going to happen in the end when you began, or is it more going along, writing as you go?
No, it's my process is it's kind of a dance between being really messy with it and being really ordered with it. So no, in the beginning I'm just following curiosity, I'm following passion, I'm following questions, I research and research gives me something really interesting and then I follow that. And so I'm just following leads for quite a while. And then there's sort of a point, it's normally about a 12,000 word mark, that I start to go, well, okay, I have an idea of where this is going and who these characters are, so maybe I should try and put a bit of order into this. And so I will plot out then, like, I'm just a macro kind of plan of what I think is going to happen, and then I keep going from there. And so it's just always this dance of I'm following the plan and then I've lost the plan and I'm following the characters and then I've totally lost the plot literally, and that means I have to go back to a plan, and it's just, it moves. But, and in terms of day-to-dayness, I have a 3.5-year-old son, so that's, you know, always challenging. It means I have to write when I'm free. So when he, you know, with grandpa or whatever it is, that's it. I have to sit, I have to turn up and write, and which is very different to when I, before I had children, of course, or a child, when I could just write whenever I wanted or write all night if I wanted to or whatever. You know, it's very ordered, and there's a lot more coffee drinking now than there used to be.
Are we, do you think, I don't know if you're allowed to talk about it, but in the future will we get the coffee book?
Possibly, yeah. I'm still, I really, what really interests me with coffee is sort of that post-World War II period in Australia where it just boomed, and it and it really, we got all that, you know, the immigration from Italy and Europe, and, you know, Australia now so known as, you know, a huge coffee country. And, you know, we're very fussy about our coffee. And so I think there's a lot there. Yeah, so no, it's definitely not off the table. I won't do wine, though. People always ask if I'll do wine. And
I always
just say no. I'm definitely never doing wine because can you imagine the research?
That's a world.
It's just a book would never get written.
Yeah.
It just wouldn't happen.
That could be the difficulty with coffee, too, if you're too hyped up on coffee.
True.
What will the book be like? Now, I also wanted to ask you, because it's hard to classify this book because it sort of has its toe in a lot of different genres, but there is a real mystery element here.
Yeah.
Do you read many
I'd call
mysteries?
It a baby mystery. I don't read any mysteries. No. And if I set out to write one, it would be awful. So it's just kind of... Again, the way that kind of happened. At some point, I realised that that's sort of what it was trying to be. And so I deliberately, you know, moved some information so it wasn't really revealed too early and put it elsewhere just to sort of keep that tension going a bit more and just, yeah, place that information a bit carefully. But, yeah, I'd call it a baby mystery. I wouldn't call it an adult mystery. It's a baby.
So I thought it was a pretty good mystery.
Really?
But it was also, you know, it was doing a lot of things. So it was telling stories in the present and the past. It was, as you mentioned, the story of a family, but also the story of a woman and the story of the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
And there's a mystery. So,
yeah.
And a lot about honey and bees.
Like, yeah, you're right. There is a lot in
it's
there.
Very richly layered. So, you know, you can going in and getting more than you expect, I think.
Yeah, I personally think this is a good book club book because it's, you know, the reasons when you get to the secrets of Maria's Secret, I think there's a lot in that about, you know, what do you now think about Maria having known that, and was it justified, and, you know, there's a lot in there to think about.
To talk about. And how much keeping a secret can define who you are. And
your family.
You
and how that goes, ripples through generations.
And the importance of communication, because there's a lot of relationships in here that are hindered because they're not communicating properly with one another, and they're sort of closing off, like Tansy and her husband, and Tansy's parents don't seem to be communicating, and even sort of the general idea of communication in the Catholic Church, where they're told not to speak up and say something.
Yes.
And yeah, I found that really sort of interesting because it runs through most of the relationships within the book.
I love talking to people about my book because they always see things in it that I don't see. It's probably... You're right.
I haven't actually read either of the other two books, but I'm really keen now, and I can actually see on the shelf behind you that we've got a copy of The Chocolate Promise. So I did like
the descriptions of food in the book, but it does make you want to have a hot chocolate when they're just sitting in the cafe having chocolate, or you know, mead that she makes with the honey and
Just...
But that's a real skill because it's not every time when you're reading descriptions of food in books that you feel it that strongly and you start craving it.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're just like, yeah, okay.
Loads of people actually emailed me and said, oh, I'm eating chocolate while I'm reading this book. It's just, and I said, my answer to that is always, you should have tried writing it. There were days when I would sit and write a scene, and by the end of that big chocolate scene that I'd just written, I just had to get in my car and run and find the nearest chocolate somewhere because I was just obsessed with it. Yeah.
If there's one thing you've learned to make during the course of writing all of your books that you would say is your favourite, that you make most often?
Food?
Anything,
do you mean?
If it were cosmetics from this book or anything across the board.
I think the biggest revelation for me was probably just that you can actually make chocolate from scratch. And I don't mean melt chocolate and mould it. I mean you can actually buy ingredients and make chocolate. And I don't know why that was such a revelation for me, but it was. And I just think that's really empowering that you can make your own chocolate.
That is actually really cool.
Yeah, and you can change it so much, you know, depending on what you add to it. So in the Chocolate Promise, Christmas Livingstone, the main character there, spends a lot of time adding things like essential oils to her chocolates and that sort of thing, which I did as well. I added, made chocolate and added rose oil, lavender oil, and it's just a beautiful thing to do. It's endlessly creative. You get to eat it at the end. It's very quick. It's actually incredibly quick to make chocolate. You just melt cocoa butter. You can even use coconut oil if you're desperate, but it's better with cocoa butter. Add cacao powder, some kind of sweetener like maple syrup, and you're done. Pour it in a mold, and you're done. And so you can, but you can add vanilla to that if you want to, or rose oil, or lavender oil, or herbs or fruit. You can do anything. I just think that's fabulous. So, yeah, I'll be doing a bit of that for Easter.
Oh, of course. Cool.
It's always good when you can justify indulging yourself as research.
Tax deductible chocolate. It's wonderful. If I'd known I could do this, I would have written about food much sooner. I wouldn't have so many manuscripts in my bottom drawer. That'd be food books.
Well, thank you so much for coming in today, Josephine.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And you can get all of Josephine's books, and particularly her new one, The Beekeeper's Secret, at Booktopia now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.